This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Good Things on the Bigger Picture, the show where we speak to good people doing good things. So it's Teachers' Day on the 16th of May, and today I'm joined by two exceptional educators, Cheryl Ann Fernando and Samuel Isaiah. No strangers to BFM, Cheryl is a Teach for Malaysia alumni. She was also part of the National Education Council for Policy Reform in 2018 and 2019. And Samuel, of course, was named as one of the top 10 finalists of the Global Teacher Prize 2020, bringing Malaysians a lot of joy during that very, very dark year. And now they're working together, and they are part of Pemimpin GSL, Cheryl as CEO and Samuel as Program Director, and the organisation is focused on improving school leadership. So they're going to join me now to share more. Welcome both of you. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you for having
me. Thank you for having
me. Always a pleasure. Always lovely speaking to the both of you. So yes, it's Teachers' Day on Monday, so we thought we'd feature two lovely educators on Good Things today. I know I've made you say this many times on the show, but please, you know, for the benefit of those who don't know, can you remind us how the both of you got into teaching in the first place? Either of you, go ahead.
Julian, if I start this story, I guess it's just going to be a very lengthy one. I'm just going to keep it very succinct and straight to the point, I guess. I think initially I didn't know why I wanted to go into teaching. I think it was just the love of languages. But I think my love for teaching and why I stayed in teaching was the kids and the children that I connected with. I think I saw myself in that Orang Asli school where I was there for 10 years. I developed a calling. I developed a purpose in what I was doing. And from that point onwards, it just made me want to do this over and over again with no regrets. So yeah, that's what led me to stay and love and enjoy what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. The kids, right? Yeah. And yep. Cheryl, how about you?
So for me, I started off as a PR consultant. I never had any intention to go into teaching. But as I was teaching refugee students and also helping out in my church, I realized that I liked teaching more than I liked PR. And then that made me make the decision to go into Teach for Malaysia, where I was teaching in a rural school in Kedah. I think like Samuel as well, it's the kids that kept me, you know, stay on in education and really love teaching.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's pretty much what you loved most about teaching then, the kids, right? Okay, yeah. Now, I guess, so that was the most, I suppose, rewarding part, right? The kids and the reception to you. But of course, there were struggles, as both of you have told us before. Maybe you can share what were some of the most troubling aspects of teaching that you guys faced. Sam, you want to go first?
Yeah, for me, I think it was clearly the accessibility, the infrastructure in the school that I was teaching at that point. But above everything else, I think was the expectations or even the lack of expectations with regards to rural indigenous kids. I think the main challenge that I had was very internal. It was whether do I really want to do this for the right reasons or do I just follow the flow and just do what everybody else was doing at that point. But I think the challenge that I faced actually made me grow so much to understand why am I doing this? Who am I doing this with? And I often say this, that it's not just about the teacher teaching the class or teaching the kids. It's always a collaborative process. We are learning with them. We are understanding and making meaning of what we're doing together in the classroom together. So despite all the challenges, I think that those were the bigger ones, you know, the internal ones, like what kind of principles I had of what teaching was and how do I want to bring education to a group of rural Orang Asli kids who had very different views of what education is and what school and learning was.
Mm-hmm. And who already had probably internalized these sorts of perceptions, right, against them. And, you know, it became almost like a vicious cycle of, like, you know, just not wanting to learn and not being taught the right way or taught the right things, perhaps, right?
Correct, exactly. And it's also something that's very prominent within the community itself. I think for the lack of belief, in the sense that they are capable of this. But I think what we negotiated together with the kids and the community was always about how can we make meaning of what we are learning from the books, from the curriculum, into something that's close to us, mm-hmm, to our culture, to our livelihoods, and to our own expectations. So I think that was the biggest difference. But learning how to do that, I think I've had conversations before with other teachers and individuals, like they were like, oh, Sam, it's easy for you. You have the trust of the community, but building that trust, building that relationship with the kids, it's a long process. It's a continuous and it's a long process. So that was also part of the challenge to be accepted, and at the same time, involving them in what I was doing and the kids we were doing in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. And getting rid of your, I suppose, maybe your own preconceived notions and things like that, right? It was a whole re-education for you as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. And how about for you, Cheryl?
Yeah, I think similarly, I think when I went into school, I think teachers always go into school and we think that we can change everything, right? And we try to solve all the problems for our students. And I think it was, I think in my second year or a few months into teaching, when I realized that I had to understand my locus of control, that there are things that happen in their homes or things that happen in their community that was beyond my scope of control or my influence. But what I had influence over was the classroom, and to give them the best lesson when they come in every day. And for all my classes that I taught were often the last classes in school, and I taught in secondary school. So by the time a student reaches Form 5 and they are in the last class, a lot of them also lack hope, and they just was like, you know, teacher, we're just going to finish this year, right? Don't care about anything else. So I think for me, it was very troubling that, you know, they gave up so easily, and society also gave up on them. And my role, I think, was a lot on how can I be a friend to them, right? How can I talk to them and just let them look back in life and know that at least one person that believed in them, or that I was nice to them. I think I had to really realign what I thought about education, what I thought about, you know, teaching and like scoring A's, or like wanting even to pass SPM, I think was a big ask for my students. Yeah. So it came to the core of like, I just want you to know that somebody cares for you and believes in you and support you. I think that was most important.
And I think that's so, I mean, what you said is so key, isn't it? Just knowing somebody believes in you really can change lives. I think we've heard so many stories, you know, of how, I know so many people who have told me how, you know, throughout school, they had teachers who didn't, you know, think they could do anything. But one teacher said, you can do this. And that really sparked, you know, the interest and built up their confidence. And my gosh, they became successful. That's why teachers are so crucial. And I'm so curious, you know, when you guys were growing up, you know, when you guys were in school, was there any teachers, any educators that you perhaps looked up to, who perhaps inspired you to go into teaching?
Well, I think for me, very cliche, but maybe my mom. My mom was, she used to teach in the kindergarten, but I think she took a lot of effort to helping students to learn how to read and just coming up with very creative methods to teach. And I think watching that growing up has helped me to become a creative teacher as well. So it was never something like she would go like try to very unconventional methods to teach. Yeah. And I think that really inspired me as I was thinking of my teaching journey and as I was teaching the classes as well.
Mm-hmm. And how about for you, Sam?
Yeah, for me, I think in my schooling years, I've had great teachers, right? But I think the point that Cheryl mentioned earlier on of how that teacher actually impacted your life, I never really had that during my school years. I think a lot of the teachers that I probably had were just doing their job. It was great. It was fantastic. But as much as I wasn't inspired. But I met one individual when I was in teaching college. Her name is Dr. Maria. I always talk about her so much. I think the key difference and the key thing that she did was she believed in me. And at a point where, yeah, she believed in me. And at the same time, that belief comes with challenging my perspectives, wanting me to continually grow, wanting me to speak up for what is right, you know, putting love and passion in what I was doing, and at the same time, to continually build my skills as a teacher in the classroom and how I can give the best for my students. I mean, she did not probably like list it down for me, but how she acted with me, right, really, really made a big impact in my life. But at the same time, I think role models and teachers in my life, in my career, I think I'm meeting more and more of them. And I also, like, you know, after I started working with Cheryl, I think I'm seeing that as well, that she continually inspires me in what she has been doing for the past 4 years. And
you can't see Cheryl look shocked at the moment.
And to be in that circle of inspiring teachers itself, teachers who want to do this for the kids, want to do their best for the kids, it's something really inspiring, keeps me moving forward. Because it becomes, I think at certain points in my career, I don't know about Cheryl, but at certain points in my career, you over often feels too much. Mm. Everything is just too much. When I was teaching in that school for about 10 years, I think I came to a point where I did everything that I could alone.
Sure.
I was at a point where I can't do this alone anymore. As much as I love the kids, as much as I love the community and what we wanted to do together, what we were achieving together, it always felt like it was a lonely journey. But I think through I progress in my career, I've been meeting more and more people that continually inspires me.
Mm-hmm. That's part of a journey, isn't it? And you're so much more than teachers, isn't it? Your counselors, your I don't know, your parents, your medical help. You know, there's so many different things that you have to do, isn't it? As teachers, it's quite a crazy job. Looking back at your careers, because both of you aren't actively teaching right now, am I correct? Because yeah, obviously you're part of Pemimpin GSL. But you know, any particular memorable moments from your teaching career that perhaps left a really deep imprint on you? Maybe Sam, you want to go first?
I think I've always, there have been many instances where I see my kids take charge of their own learning, and that really, really inspires me. I remember when I was teaching the kids to play music and to play the ukulele, we had this, there was this event organized by the Ministry of Education at that point by the district, right? So the kids were there, they had to perform. So when they were brought on stage to perform, they were like all, they were really, really anxious, really nervous. I felt so bad because I told them that, you know, when we are, what we did with the ukulele and the music, it's not to perform, because I understand the idea of performing can be very daunting, but it's just to enjoy and to learn and to speak and to use that language. But after that performance, we went out of the hall, we were at our booth, and we suddenly got a call that all the VVIPs were supposed to come and visit the booths. And my kids, in that period of 30 minutes, we were just hanging around by the booth, you know, talking to one another. Then we started feeling like it was in the classroom itself. Mm. And as we were hanging out, as we were just talking to one another, a few of them took the ukulele, started singing the songs that we were singing in the classroom so casually and so happily. They were all dancing there. Then when the VVIPs came, they were in their moment. And after all that things, the VVIPs had a great time singing and enjoying with the kids. They started speaking to the kids, right? And when I teach my kids to play the ukulele, I teach them in English. Like, you need to use these fingers to be placed at this certain strings and all that. And when they were communicating with the VVIPs, they were actually teaching them in English. And I was so surprised. I was very surprised. And they were like trying their best to show them that, you know, this is how you do it, right? You put this finger here. And when I saw, and I continue, I've seen moments like this so many times, and I see that empowerment, teaching, learning, you know, uplifting them. It's not so much about what best I can do in the classroom. I think sometimes we are just too focused on, you know, am I coming up with the best, most grandest lesson ever? But what kind of impact is it, does it bring to the students? And when I saw that, you know, what I was doing was more than just teaching a lesson. It was just building character and building these kids into something that they are proud to be.
Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting, isn't it? You know, through teaching them music, you also taught them language and literacy. And, you know, it goes back to, I think, what Cheryl said, you know, finding creative ways and different ways to teach them that they don't even realize it's a lesson, isn't it? And and those are the memories that they keep. What about for you, Cheryl?
Yeah, I think for me, so I thought, because I taught in secondary school, so my students are much older, sometimes a bit more difficult to deal with. And I remember that I was teaching the last class, and when I first started teaching, I think I've mentioned this before, so I was one of the few non-Muslims in the school. And when I first started, a lot of times they would, you know, point out things like, oh, teacher, why are you not wearing the headscarf? Or teacher, you know, why are you not Muslim? And things like that. And I would always take the time to like explain to them, right? Like, oh, it's different. Teacher is from a different race and religion, and you have to try to understand that. And I never thought, I mean, I would say it, but I would never get offended if they say these things, until I think we had a new student come into our class, and that student asked the same question, and immediately everyone in the class defended me, and they were like, no, you have to, and everything that I taught them, that I thought they never got it right, yeah, they were telling this back. They were like, okay, teacher is not Muslim, so she doesn't have to cover her head, she doesn't have to cover her hair, this is her name, this is her race, this is her religion. And I was like, wow, that's really good. And I was very proud that they understood that, because I think that was really tough for them to accept someone not from their community, to accept someone from a different race and religion, which was initially the biggest thing for them, right? Teacher, you are different, right? You are not like us.
Mm.
But towards the end, they were like, teacher, even though you're different, we think you're great. So I said, I'll take it. I'll take whatever I can get. And I think that that showed a lot of how much they understood. I was very proud. I was very proud of them. And I really see them, like, until today, still carrying that notion that even though people are different, not alike as me, it's okay. Mm-hmm. And I was very proud of that.
And it's, as you should be. You're teaching them life lessons right there, isn't it? Tolerance, acceptance, and opening their minds so much. And that is what teachers are so important for, you know, all these, yes, literacy, numeracy, all of that, but also all of these sorts of life lessons that we need to learn. That's how we get good adults. Okay, let's go for one quick break, and then when we come back, let's find out more about Pemimpin GSL. I'm speaking today to Cheryl Ann Fernando and Samuel Isaiah. They are part of Pemimpin GSL. It's Good Things, and we're talking to them because they are both educators, and it's Teachers Day on Monday. We'll have more after this quick break. You're listening to Good Things on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Good Things on The Bigger Picture, the show where we speak to good people doing good things. I have two lovely people with me today, Cheryl Ann Fernando, the CEO of Pemimpin GSL, and Samuel Isaiah, the program director of Pemimpin GSL. It's our Teachers Day special today on Good Things, and both Cheryl and Samuel are exceptional educators. Cheryl was, again, a Teach for Malaysia alumni. She was also part of the National Education Council for Policy Reform back in 2018 and 2019. And Samuel, of course, was named as one of the top 10 finalists of the Global Teacher Prize back in 2020. Now together, they are working on Pemimpin GSL, which we want to find out more about. I mean, you did join me, I think it was back in January, Cheryl, to tell me a little bit about Pemimpin GSL. But for those of us who might not remember, who might not have heard that, can you remind listeners what this organization is all about?
I started Pemimpin in 2017. It started as an organization focused on providing leadership development for school leaders. So at that time, for our first cohort, we worked with 22 schools from KL and Selangor, where we coached, we guided and supported the school leaders through a two-year program. So we guide them on the types of intervention that they can do in their schools, on how do they bridge the equity gap in their schools through workshops and through coaching. And today, I think from what we started in 2017 with 22 schools, today we have over 800 schools that we support, and we also do programs for middle leaders, so teachers who are aspiring to become school principals. So we have a 9-month program for them where we support them through professional learning communities as well as workshops, and we also have masterclass series for teacher leaders where they can learn new ways to change their classroom instructions, to gamification in teaching and learning, and they can implement it in their classroom. So these are the three programs that we offer for the three different tiers in leadership.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so those are the programs that you're talking about. And Sam, you know, as program director, how do you come up with the programs? You know, how do you sort of decide what needs to, I guess, be done in that sense, right?
Right. Well, if you're talking about our most recent program, the ASLI program, I think that came through a lot of deliberation, a lot of research based on what are the needs of Orang Asli schools and also about underprivileged schools. So when we were looking at how can we help Orang Asli schools, what we did was we actually went out and spoke to a lot of experts in the field. So usually we go through that process of trying to understand what the needs of these schools first. And at the same time, when we brought in all these experts, when we were looking through all the documents, and we clearly identified that leadership in Orang Asli schools are one of the key areas that has not been addressed so much, we decided to go into that together with the team. We have got a great team of curriculum consultants, of program leaders, and also individuals who can train school leaders really well. And as for the Accelerated School Leaders Initiative that we just launched in the state of Perak, I think we also got the buy-in of the State Education Department. So that was fantastic.
Excellent.
We have been negotiating and collaborating with them, because as much as we know what we can bring, we also know that systemic change comes when a lot of people collaborate and work together to bring this, to bring forth any change. And at the same time, some of the key elements that we are looking at, especially with the ASLI program, is how can we negotiate and how can we collaborate with community members and involve the Orang Asli community in whatever decisions the schools are making. Because oftentimes they have been left aside in school decisions, in classroom decisions, or even if they have been engaged with, it's often very superficial. So we want that active involvement. So to make sure that whatever these schools are doing, I think this is a key factor of all Pemimpin GSL programs, is that it's not about what we can tell you to do. It's, we are not going into these schools and telling them, you know, you need to create this thing and this will guarantee success in your schools. We don't do that. We co-create it with them. We understand the issues that they face together. We listen to these school leaders, and together with all the other stakeholders involved, we come up with contextualized and localized solutions that works for them based on issues that they want to address first. So that whole process, I think, is not so much about the product yet. Mm-hmm. The process itself, it's a process of building their mindset towards what changes and what they can improve gradually in their schools. And in time, I think in a lot of our programs, in a year, in 2 years, once it's concluded, we see a significant change, not just in the programs that these school leaders are implementing, but what they foresee they want to do later on as well. And this is, I think, it's a crucial aspect in a lot of programs that we do, is the sustainability aspect. So once they've got that mindset, they know what to do, they know how to execute it efficiently based on all the tools that we're teaching them, they know how to engage with the relevant stakeholders to design contextualized solutions, and most importantly, where their heart is really at creating sustainability in whatever they are doing, and then we can see changes together. So that is generally the process that we go through from the conception of the program, the delivery of the program, and how we inspire sustainability. And we're also looking at creating an alumni network. So for Pemimpin DSL, we connect local school leaders with leaders from other countries as well. So yeah, we have got a network of 9 countries, right, Cheryl? 9 countries. So oftentimes this sharing of experience, sharing of best practices also is a key element of what we do.
That's excellent. And how did you build up this network? This is from your own sort of personal networking, and you've brought it all together?
So Pemimpin is part of the Global School Leaders parent organization. Mm-hmm. And they have the work that we are doing in Malaysia. It's the same in Indonesia, in Kenya, I think Brazil. Right. There are 9 countries. So the school leaders in these countries go through the fellowship program as well, like what we do here in Malaysia. So we always have the sharing of best practices from these different countries with Malaysian teachers as well.
Okay, excellent. So wow, so you've got a whole huge network then that you can tap on, isn't it? And mix and match and see what's best suited. Okay, excellent. And you speak about school leaders, right? Maybe who are the school leaders that you work with? I mean, is it only just the teachers, or do we start right from the headmasters, you know, everybody? Yeah, who do we work with? Who do you work with? I'm trying to put myself in your group there. Who do you guys work with?
So when we say school leaders, it is usually the principal and the senior administrators. So the PK, the penolong kanan. Mm. So in a school, usually they will have 4 penolong kanan in charge of administration, in charge of student affairs, co-curriculum, and just one main one, right? So we work with the 5 of them in a school. So that's the school leader category. When we say middle leaders, we do the head of subjects. When they are head of a certain unit in the school, then we work with them as middle leaders. Mm-hmm. And teacher leaders are, of course, aspiring teachers who are aspiring to go into leadership positions in school.
Okay,
That's how we divide our programs.
Okay, excellent. And these, of course, are our local kebangsaan schools mostly, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much. All government schools only. Okay, all right. I just want to go back to the ASLI program. So that's Accelerated School Leaders Initiative, as you were talking about earlier, Sam. I guess, you know, maybe if people don't quite understand why this is even needed, you know, can you sort of elaborate on that, those gaps that exist between the country's indigenous and non-indigenous school children? I remember, you know, when I was speaking to you back in 2020, you said that the Orang Asli kids did not have equal opportunities compared to the urban schools, right? Maybe you can help explain that.
I think one of the key issues in Orang Asli schools, I think if generally we look at the research literature, it's like school attendance, very low school attendance rate, very high dropout rates. And as we dig deeper, some of the key reasons would be that there is a mismatch between what the curriculum intends to do and how they perceive what education is in general. For example, there's a lack of context, there's a lack of culture, and a lot of our perception of what education is. So from what Cheryl and I, you perhaps as well, for us, the transition from year 1 to year 6 and form 1 to form 5 is a natural transition. There's no point throughout that 10 years of education or 12 years of education that we thought that I'm going to quit halfway. Yeah. It doesn't work that way. But for Orang Asli kids, this often comes up. And although there are other issues, including poverty, the lack of accessibility and infrastructure and all that, but mainly in schools, one of the biggest gaps is how they make meaning of the learning. So when schools often focus on exams, when schools often focus on answering questions, and these kids are coming from a very different background altogether, where learning for them in their culture is something that is experience, something that you collaborate and create, something that you are very hands-on with, somewhere where you appreciate the elements around you and nature. So when those elements come into school and schools don't encourage that, they just continue, they just, you know, right away, they just lose interest altogether and they just don't engage. So whatever teachers try to do is basically, you know, just bouncing off the wall from the very beginning itself. So we lose them very quickly. And in Orang Asli schools, it's quite common for kids to, you know, when they register in year one and 2 years after that, they quit school, and another few years after that, they come back to school again. So there's no... What I observed was the kids don't come to school because they want to come to school. It's just, that's just it. So that is, those are some of the biggest educational gaps, is that the expectations of what education is and what they want to use that education that they are learning from in school to their lives, it's either non-existent or the relationship is not as strong as we want it to be. So I think that is one of the biggest gaps of that a lot of schools struggle with.
Okay, and how do you hope that this program will sort of assist in that? You know, how is it going to fill those gaps?
Right. So, and that is why when we are working with the school leaders, we believe that the school leaders are the key figures to implement whatever change in the school. Back when I was in school as well, when I had a great boss who allowed me to actually, you know, come up with solutions and formulate something together with the kids. It was a huge plus because we were seeing eye to eye. We have the same expectations of what we want to do together with the kids, and it made things so much easier. And whatever impact that we were measuring throughout was something that we can sustain. And that is why we are working with school leaders, and we are developing capacity of how to do things better. We are incorporating technology. We are incorporating different types of modules, different types of frameworks. We look at the mindset as well. We are also looking at elements of how they can lead their team members better, as in their school leaders better. We get them to actually plan out. There's something that we have called the SIDP, or the School Improvement Development Plan, of how they can map up small changes, even for short term, mid term to long term, how they can do that, how they can set a clear vision, a clear objective for everybody in the school to really believe in that vision and see how they can measure that vision in time as well. So these are the skills. But for Orang Asli schools, what we are doing is also, we are referring to a lot of local experts. We are also referring to documents from UNESCO, from UNICEF, from the World Bank as well, to strengthen what we are delivering. Because when Shara and I were actually developing the program for Orang Asli schools, we know this is like unknown territory, and a lot of programs have been done for Orang Asli schools, but a lot of them don't succeed. It's usually the bare minimum, or it's just nothing happens at all. So we knew that this was a huge task for us to take on in the first place, and that is why we made a conscious effort to include Indigenous curriculum, the idea of learning from the Indigenous perspective into whatever that we are delivering to these schools. If not, it's just going to be a complete mismatch, and we are basically doing what everybody else is doing and forcing things that don't fit for the Orang Asli community.
Okay, and sustainability, of course, right? Making sure that this can continue, isn't it? What I've heard from other people, you know, a lot of the Orang Asli folks themselves feel like, oh, if you're just coming in, you're going to do your project and then you're going to leave, right? And so they also don't want to. They're like, it's just another flash in the pan sort of thing. So how are you trying to counter that as well and you know, ensure that it's there for the long term, I suppose, yeah.
Exactly. And in whatever that we are delivering with the school leaders, our first session with them actually starts at the end of this month with the school leaders, is to give them the idea that whatever that you're doing is together with the community and not for the community. Whole different perspective altogether. So at every process, from the planning, from the getting the resources, from to the execution, to the assessment, everything needs to involve the community. They need to feel valued in whatever we are doing together. If not, it's just, they just don't understand. I think this is also something that we can learn from other policies that's being implemented. I think when the school-based assessment system was implemented in schools, a lot of parents did not understand, how is this different from the grades and the A's, right? Because there was a lack of engagement. Yeah. There was a lack of communication. So people are not convinced. And when they are not convinced, they don't trust you. And when they don't trust you, they just don't want to be involved. So building that is crucial, and that is why we are focusing a lot on how these schools can involve the community throughout whatever they are doing.
Okay. All right. That sounds really exciting. And you mentioned it starting in Pera. Are there plans to sort of start expanding, or are you hoping maybe other states might, you know, come and collaborate with you guys?
Yeah. So in Pera, we are starting our first cohort with 15 Orang Asli schools, and there are 30 Orang Asli schools in Pera. So hopefully we'll start our next cohort immediately in Pera as well. So in this way, we get to cover all the Orang Asli schools in Pera before moving on to the next state. I think the next state that we are looking at is Pahang, and then definitely Selangor as well. So we have identified a few states that we know have Orang Asli students, and we'll be working with them.
Okay. Oh gosh, I'm really excited for you guys. So that's happening. And you know, just I think it was what on Tuesday, you guys launched something else, and that's called the Malaysia Teacher Prize. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So we launched the Malaysia Teacher Prize on Tuesday. This started from a discussion last year, I think, when we were thinking about what else can we do to elevate teacher status, elevate the profession of teachers, right? And then we started having a conversation with Baki Foundation. Baki Foundation is the foundation that runs the Global Teacher Prize, competition, right? Yeah. And then Baki was like, they don't have a representative in Malaysia, and there are 40 other countries that are carrying out the National Teacher Prize. Oh. So they were like, okay, let's do it.
There you have one finalist, right? Right next to you, right?
There you go. Like, who else better to do this, right, than you? And he's like, okay. So then we signed an MOU with Baki. And then after, I think it was a lot of challenges, I think, from last year, October to this year. I think we struggled a bit with funding, trying to secure funding for it. We struggled a bit with support from the Ministry of Education. But then, our launch date kept getting pushed back.
Oh, no.
I think we were supposed to launch in March.
March, yeah.
But then it got pushed to May. But we were like, you know what, as long as it's out there. And finally, we've gotten the support from the ministry, the support from a funder, from YTL Foundation, who came in support of the Malaysia Teacher Prize in partnership with their 25th anniversary. And we were like, okay, so let's do this. So we launched on Tuesday, and we announced that the teacher, the winner, will get 50,000 cash prize. Mm-hmm. And then the four other finalists will get 5,000 ringgit.
In addition to that, I think some of the things that we have learned while we were planning for this is how we can scale these ideas of these teachers as well. I think as much as these teachers, when we get these 10 finalists or the winner of it, we are ensuring that this individual is at the forefront of whatever policy decisions or whatever interventions. How do we make sure that whatever this individual is doing is scaled throughout? And these are the things that we were constantly looking at. So we are also coming up with a professional development plan for the 10 finalists of the Malaysia Teacher Prize. The idea is to equip them. The idea is to give them global views to their localized classroom ideas and see how we can bring whatever they are doing. I think a lot of times when we speak about interventions, it's always, oh, something from Singapore, right? Or something from the UK. This is the best book in the UK, right? We want to show that a lot of great ideas also start in the classroom. A lot of great ideas come from great teachers putting their heart and soul in it. And we want to find that idea and see how we can package it together with this individual that wins it and scale it all across Malaysia. I think that is the best. I think as much as we talk about, we want to improve the teacher status, we want to elevate the teaching profession. But at the end of the day, it has to lead to student outcomes. How is it going to impact the students? I think so. From the Global Teacher Prize, after being in the top 10 finalists, I think it changed my life. It also gave me a voice. Mm-hmm. And we want to give this voice back to Malaysian teachers to represent what they're doing in the classroom, to represent their kids, to represent the community that they're serving. Because representation is very important. And a lot of times teachers may feel that their voices are not heard. You know, I mean, as much as that can be improved, but a lot of them have this feeling that nobody is listening to them. So we want to give them that platform as well to voice out and have a voice and make a difference, a significant difference in however our education system is actually projecting towards.
Okay, excellent. And I guess this is open to all Malaysian teachers. Am I correct? What are the sort of mechanics involved? How do people, or do you already have people participating? Yeah, what's happening
there?
Yeah,
we have
100+ applications.
Wow.
First 24 hours yeah. that we launched.
Well done.
So I think it's open to all Malaysian teachers. So it's not just confined to government school teachers. As long as a teacher is teaching the Malaysian syllabus, whether it's in a private school or whether it is in a refugee school or any sort of alternative schooling, as long as they're teaching the Malaysian syllabus, yeah. they can apply for it. Okay. They must be teaching for at least 5 years. They at least 5 years teaching experience and teaching 10 hours a week. Okay. That's the criteria that we are looking at. And I think, yeah, other than that, it's open. It's open to every single teacher out there in Malaysia.
Yeah, sorry.
They can apply on malaysiateacherprize.org.
Right, malaysiateacherprize.org. So as they go through the application, and we are also looking at individuals, right? I think ideally we want a teacher that is able to lead these different types of changes. So it's not solely based on what they've been doing, but what they can do as well. Mm-hmm. I think these are the things that we're also looking at, that individual that can represent Malaysia. And hopefully in next year or in a few years, we get a Malaysian Global Teacher Prize winner that bags the $1 million and clearly shows that in Malaysia, when given the opportunity, we've got world-renowned teachers of high standards in Malaysia itself. So, yeah, that's the plan. So, yeah, I would really like to encourage everyone to apply for it if you're a teacher, or if you know of a teacher who really does really well and is fantastic and would love to take home that 50,000 ringgit, just head over to the website. You can nominate a teacher as well.
Oh,
and that particular teacher will receive the instructions of how to apply and all that.
Okay. Oh, that's excellent. All right. And is there a deadline for this?
Yes. So the deadline is the 30th of June.
Okay. All right. So just got about a month and a half to go, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
All right. So everything is available. I mean, all the information at malaysiateacherprize.org. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, you guys have a lot going, and I'm going to be annoying and ask you, what are some other plans in the pipeline? What else are you guys working on? I know, right? Like, it's not enough. Yeah. What's some more?
But now I told Sam, like, don't convince me to do anything.
I'm very convincing, though. I like to think so.
We can't do anymore. No, I think for this year, I mean, these things that we, ASLI, Malaysia Teacher Prize, think our existing programs, the things that we've been talking about from last year. So to finally see it, you know, happening live, I think it's very exciting. But as we're thinking about the future plans, I think definitely looking at professional development and how it can be more readily available, easily available for teachers out there, mm-hmm. whether it is through a platform or whether it's through an app. What will it take for teachers to get access to professional, high-quality, evidence-based professional development? I think that's something that we're thinking about. Also looking at student intervention or student leadership that we can do, especially with the Orang Asli communities in the 15 schools that we are in. I think this is two things that we are thinking of.
She's not committing. She's thinking about it. But yes, you have so much. I mean, gosh, even getting the Malaysia Teacher Prize was such a challenge and such a journey, isn't it? Okay, well.
I think shout out to our team as well. We've got a fantastic team of fantastic individuals. We've been growing in that aspect as well. Everyone is, everyone in Pemimpin GSL not only have very high skills, but at the same time, passion, wanting to make a difference. I think that is a huge difference. I mean, that makes or breaks whatever we want to do. As both Shada and I, we have got extensive plans, but if we don't have a team that believes in what we want to do together, I think everything is just going to fall apart. So if you shout out to them as well, we've all been working together, putting our hearts, putting our souls, putting all our brains into this and trying to deliver it. And all for teachers in Malaysia and education in general and the kids.
Okay, that's excellent. Congratulations. You guys have done so well in such a short time. Is there any way, any sort of assistance that would be helpful for the work that you guys do? You know, probably from corporates or anything like that? Yeah, what would be helpful?
A lot of times when corporates look at CSR, they always look at very conventional CSR, like, you know, whether it is donation to the students and things like that. But I think Malaysia needs to really move this to understanding that CSR must also look at the different aspects of education and what really makes a big impact. I think it took a long time when I first started to convince funders that investing in school leaders, investing in teachers is investing in education. Mm. right, you will see the impact. And when you invest in one school leader, you invest in the entire school. When the school leader improves, the entire school improves. And research itself shows that a good school leader can improve their school up to 25% for every student there. And I think that in this way, you know, we definitely want to urge corporates, as they're thinking of their CSR, to really diversify it. And while supporting immediate needs of students is very important, I think if we're thinking of sustainability, if we're thinking of long-term plans in education, then it's definitely investment in teachers and students, teachers and school leaders. I think that is key. And also, I think for the work that we're doing for now, it's the Malaysia Teacher Prize, right? So we want as many people to, you know, nominate teachers to apply, to share with teachers. And I think we, unlike the other teacher prize that's available in Malaysia, a lot of our investment goes back for the price. So we wanted the price money to be significant. Mm. So not so much on our advertising and all that. We're just using whatever we have, our social media, to like promote this, right? So we hope that people will also help us to spread the word out there.
Okay, can do. Let me know. I'll be there. Let me know when it's time. We'll speak to those teachers. I guess, yes, we've just run out of time. So any last message that you'd like to leave us with? I suppose just ahead of our Teachers' Day this year.
Yeah, we like to I think a lot of teachers would really love it if we gave them more trust and more support. So I think as for Pemimpin GSL, we like to say that we believe in you, we trust what you are doing as well. Coming from one teacher to another, we really know the hard work that teachers are doing. So don't fret, always believe in what you're doing, always believe in the kids that you're focusing on, and everything will be well for you. So yeah, last message for Teachers Day.
Okay, all right. Cheryl, anything you want to say?
Yeah, I think the same, Happy Teachers Day. I think we will always speak for and advocate right. for teachers. And for us, like that, they are our biggest stakeholders. And you know, we will always, always believe in teachers and trust them and to support them in whatever that they're doing.
Yeah, and I suppose going back to what you said, sometimes it can feel like a very lonely journey. Know that there are people out there who are there to help you. Yeah, just get in touch with Pemimpin GSL for starters, and you guys can lead them to the right path. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Cheryl Ann Fernando, the CEO of Pemimpin GSL, and Samuel Isaiah, the Program Director of Pemimpin GSL. If you'd like to find out more about them, just head to pemimpingsl.org. If you'd like to find out more about the Malaysia Teacher Prize, it's malaysiateacherprize.org. And if you miss any part of today's interview, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Good Things on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.